8:38, let's check in with Dick Weiss, our media critic extraordinaire. Dick Weiss from WeissWrite.com, also a longtime editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, as well as a contributing editor to STLBeacon.org. Dick, good morning on this
morning. Good morning,
bro. Talk to me about your thoughts and this Joe Buck TV show on HBO.
Well, I just kind of found out about it this weekend. I went on the internet and looked around for what I could find, and I saw a guy named Artie Lang, who I'd never heard of.
Right.
He's on Howard Stern, and
right.
I don't do satellite radio, and apparently he's known to be profane, as is Howard. And he lit Joe up. Have you ever had an experience like that where somebody tried to take you apart on your own show, except
no,
for me?
I haven't. I have had some people drop some curse words that we've been able to delete.
That's right. You had that 5-second
right,
delay.
Yeah.
And,
but TV
this was live.
This was live. Doesn't have a delay.
Live,
even though we're live, we still are in a 10-second delay. I don't know. Nothing even close to that.
Lang dropped some really ugly language
right.
on that show and really kind of mocked Joe
right.
on his first, and said, he really wasn't up to doing something like this, and he ought to go back to
right.
Sports announcing, and he said some ugly things about Jessica Simpson, and it went on and on. And what I was surprised by was Joe actually handled it rather deftly.
I agree.
While on the air, I thought he did as well as he could. Afterwards, I thought he would come out with a kind of an apology. Sorry, folks. But he actually said, "Well, that's live TV, and as long as people are watching."
He was quoted in the New York Times as saying, "If it were taped, it wouldn't have aired."
Yeah.
So and I mean, there's only so much you can apologize for. It is what it is. Sorry it happened, but, I don't know.
I thought Michael Irvin had the best line. He said it was refreshing to see white-on-white crime.
White-on-white crime was good. Yeah, it was good. How about this story in terms of news gathering as you watch what's going on in Tehran, Iran, where they are cracking down on all of the news organizations and the news outlets. However, word is getting out because of Twitter.
Because of Twitter. At least that's the kind of the vibe, and that's what people are saying. And there was a piece in the Washington Post written by John Palfrey, who kind of follows this Twittering and social networking and so on. He says, don't make too much of it. It isn't as if the revolution, if that's what we're going through, wouldn't have happened without Twitter. But Twitter has certainly helped facilitate things because apparently it's harder to trace and harder to get off the air, as it were, than some of the Facebooks and so on. But Twittering, since it's only 140 characters, you can say give me liberty or give me death, and
right.
I think that's about 40 or 50 characters. But you could not get Patrick Henry's entire 1,200-word speech in a Twitter, so it is somewhat limited. And, of course, what the government can do and what supporters of the government can do is also Twitter and kind of fill it up with other stuff. So it can be a little bit hard to follow and to really learn what's going on. And, of course, a lot of the stuff that is Twittered is unverified, and so the government can put out disinformation as well.
Well, but they can also say, hey, we can plan a rally for Tuesday at noon on the corner of, Elm and First Street.
Right, and the government could put that out and find and get everybody together who's an opponent and circle the wagons around.
Sure, that's true. But I mean, information with information comes misinformation as
exactly.
well.
Yeah. So it's it certainly has had an impact. There's no question about that. But it's not all in favor of the opposition.
Yeah. I also find it. You're more of a media critic, but I still find it interesting, and I haven't seen too much reported on this. Is that 30 years ago, the Iranian revolutionaries were doing the same thing these students are doing today, but now they're in power.
Right.
It's ironic that the revolutionaries have become the establishment.
Yes. Well, there's a formula. I remember reading about this in college. There's a formula for revolutions, a so-called rising tide of expectations in which people think something's going to happen and the government has to respond to that, and if they don't, then there's even more.
Right.
And it's a very, very hard to tamp down once it sort of gets rolling
right.
down the hill. But then the revolution ages and gentrifies, and there's sort of a hardening of the arteries that occurs, and then you have another generation that comes along, and you know, if this indeed is a revolution, there will be more expectations for this new regime. And if they don't live up to them, they say the revolution eats its young.
Yeah. what's this story about Amazon, this Kindle thing? Tell me about
that. Well, there was a Kindle. Kindle is essentially an e-reader. You can download books, magazines, newspapers, and so on. And Amazon.
So hold on. Then you buy this tablet, if you will.
Yes, it's a little tablet. And very thin, very light, weighs less than the a book weighs.
And they send to you the St. Louis Post Dispatch and the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Download it into this little object, and it can only do certain things. You basically only read stuff on it. It's not like a laptop. It's not very interactive. You can't go and click here and there. It's just what you download in there. But you can, in the smaller version of the Kindle, which came out, I guess, about a year ago, you could carry around 1,500 books. Now they've come out with the Kindle DX. The smaller Kindle was about $350. Now they want nearly $500 for the DX, which is a larger tablet. And it's essentially the size of an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. And you can carry around 5,000 books if you want, and countless newspapers and magazines. And supposedly this is going to be easier to read a newspaper or a magazine on this thing than the smaller Kindle. And you will subscribe to the New York Times. I think it was maybe $15 a month, if I'm not mistaken, or $11 for some newspapers. And this is supposed to save our bacon in terms of the newspapers. However, it is still not it is not as good an experience, I think, as reading the newspaper online, the New York Times, because it's not as interactive. And certainly the what you get from actually holding a newspaper in your hand is that ability to scan and breeze through a paper very quickly, read the headlines. What this gives you is kind of a table of contents that you can click on,
right,
and then you can go to the article, and it's a nice read when you get there. But it's scannability.
$1,500
No. $500 okay. For this tablet that kind of it's very lightweight, and but it just it's a fairly dumb machine in terms of what you can do with, say, a netbook or a laptop.
Right.
It doesn't get hot like some of the laptops. I have to put a towel on my lap for the laptop I have right now because it gets kind of hot.
But yeah, mine does too, actually.
Yeah. So they'll fix that.
What's the what's going on in the Beacon we should know about?
Great series started this on Friday, continuing this week on people with Asperger's, which is a form of autism. A lot of high functioning, otherwise high functioning adults, very bright people have Asperger's. They're socially somewhat inept and difficult, and they kind of focus on one thing. And it portrays there are three people that are being portrayed in this series about how they deal with their Asperger's and the services they either can get through schools or aren't able to get. And a very interesting, insightful series by Nancy Larson, a freelancer. And people who have someone with Asperger's in their family or know somebody, and it's probably you probably do, would be well advised to read this story.
That's stlbeacon.org. And then what's the best story we've never read?
Well, interesting piece. There's a terrific columnist, not as well known as some of the others in the New York Times, by the name of Dan Barry. And he writes about New York, and he, in this case, he writes about his family. And you ever have a goldfish when you're a kid?
Yes, you know, I think everybody had a goldfish.
You know, and you're always, you know, sometimes they just kind of, you know, you want them to eat, and you throw a lot of food at them, and they won't eat. And so this, he writes about his five-year-old's goldfish and how it was just about to go belly up and how it made him think. And how, now, here's a neat trick. We're talking about how people who aren't very tasteful, like Artie Lang, how you can tastefully talk about a goldfish dying in your bowl and then reflect on the death of your loved ones, your mom and your dad, as you're watching a goldfish die. He does it very beautifully. It's a very poignant little piece about goldfish dying.
Well, we can find that at weisright.com, right?
Yeah, Weisright. The link is at weisright.com, and Dan Barry writes for the New York Times.
There you go. And don't forget stlbeacon.org, that story about Asperger's. Dick Weiss, always a pleasure. Have a good week.
Thank you.
You got it. Mike Shannon joins us next in the home of the Cardinals, Big 550 KT.